Hey there, honkies. You know, every time I end up doing one of these, I end up apologizing for not having done one in a while. Not that anybody really cares all that much, but I think I'm just going to stop apologizing because I think people figure out that if I haven't done it in a while, then I'm either in prison or, you know, I'm home busy doing crunches or something like that. You know, I'm big on the crunches. So this time, I thought we'd talk about the Beatles a little bit, because every couple of years, America goes, like, Beatles crazy all over again. It's like, you know, we completely forget that they existed, and then everybody comes back and kind of goes crazy again. And I think this is going to be the year that it cycles back again, because Rock Band is coming out with their video game version of the Beatles. And my good friend, Barry Lenzer, who's also a part-time music writer and blogger, has a blog on the Beatles. It's called Beatlemania Revisited. And he is going to join us to talk a little bit about the Beatles. And he has his list of his top five most underappreciated Beatles songs, which they're all good songs. And he's going to explain a little bit to us what they mean to him. So, without further ado, what's up, man?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing just great. So now you tell us a little bit about the journey. You used to work in the Capitol.
Yeah.
You used to write for the Badger Herald. You were a music reviewer, were you not?
That's correct. Yeah, I wrote for the Badger Herald for a year, and then for Emmy Magazine, which is a little publication, arts publication that comes out, I think, twice a year. And then the summer before I left, I started writing for I'm not sure if it was the Capital Times, maybe, or one of the other ones, had a little, like arts paper that was affiliated with it that they put out, and you could, like, become a blogger, and sometimes it would get printed in this actual, like, physical publication. So I did that for a little bit, too. So, yeah, a lot of the background was definitely in, like, in arts review and writing and whatnot.
So now, back in the day, I believe this is back in 06, you wrote a review for the Badger Herald that we never really used up our reserve for making fun of you for this review. Do you remember the one?
The Justin Timberlake review?
Yes.
I beg to differ, actually. I think you did use up your reserve. I remember a lot of ridicule about that. But well, did you not say that it was one of your favorite albums at the end of the year in your, like, CD year wrap-up?
Well, that's kind of the purpose of me bringing it up, because here you know, I'm willing to kind of bury the hatchet. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, because the entire internet world has been wondering how that all worked out with me teasing you about Justin Timberlake. And
mm-hmm. You know, they have been.
I could actually dial it up right now and maybe read some of the quotes.
If you want to, you know, feel free to.
Because, I mean, people don't remember this, but in 06, like, the world was desperately in need of sexy being brought back.
Absolutely. And it did get robbed.
And JT, I think, definitely did that for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think I feel pretty vindicated. Like the reviews of it were very positive, and, like, even, like, the hipster kids, like Justin Timberlake. In fact, Pitchfork had My Love as their song of the year that year. So I think I don't think I was on the outside looking in by any means.
No, I think
having given that a pretty positive review.
I think you're definitely vindicated in that respect. So now, what brings you to the Beatles? What you being a young pup, born well after the death of John Lennon, and somehow you ended up just being a Beatles fanatic. How did that work?
Well, I guess that was the first, like, pop music that I encountered, I think, like, in fourth or fifth grade. I remember listening to the Blue and Red Greatest Hits quite a lot. So that introduced me to pop music. And then it's always been, you know, for most fans of, you know, just music in general, it's kind of a constant, you know, in their life. Like, you know, I fall back on the Beatles if Radiohead's not treating you well one day, or, you know, whatever. So it always been there. And then for a while I'd been like wanting to start a blog, but I didn't want to do one. I didn't think I had like the charm or the humor or whatever to do one like you did, to say, you know, like
what?
Like, you know, just kind of miscellaneous stuff. I wanted it to be focused, and I thought, like, actually what happened was I encountered a Beatles song that I'd never heard before. I thought it was awesome. I was like, I need to educate myself more because I claim to be a huge Beatles fan, but I'd never heard the song before and it was awesome. So that's like that kind of that and the desire to create a blog and write more consistently just kind of pushed me in that direction. So that's where we are.
You keep complimenting me like that, and people are going to wonder why you're my podcast guest like every week.
Maybe we can do one about the Smiths sometime. Me as a new fan, and you as an old veteran.
Perhaps. So every couple of years, like every 3 years, there's some kind of Beatles revival. Like, you know, they find some kind of, you know, long lost recording that Paul McCartney,
right,
like he finds in his stack of porn in his attic or something, and he like comes across some version of Hey Jude that's never been recorded, and then they slap another bunch of songs around it and make it another kind of collection of B-sides or something. So, I mean, are we headed for another one of those pretty soon, or?
In August, or maybe it's September. It's actually the 9th. I think the 9th of September. It's the same day that the Beatles Rock Band game's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
All of the Beatles CDs digitally remastered are going to be coming out. So that's been quite the buzz in like the Beatles fan community.
Yeah, see, I've listened to a lot of these albums that are supposed to be digitally remastered, and they don't really, I mean, they don't really sound much different. Like they just digitally remastered Pearl Jam's 10, I think, and so I went and I got that and I listened to it, and it's like, well, I mean, it's a good album, but it's not, I mean, it doesn't open any new doors for me here.
Right. So. Well, what will be interesting is, like, especially with, like the albums Rubber Soul or Revolver and Onwards, just because those were albums that, oh, especially starting with Sgt. Pepper's, you know, those were albums that were made in the studio, and they were made knowing that they weren't going to be performed live. So hopefully, like, all the different elements will really come out and sound, like, more crisp and sharp, as opposed to, like, you know, like, I agree. Like, I don't know what a digital remastering might do to, like, She Loves You or I Want to Hold Your Hand, but with some of, like, the more experimental songs, you know, it might be able to do some things. So that'll be interesting.
So this guy comes out with this book. Would it come out in the last week or two about how the Beatles killed rock and roll? And you haven't read it. And I haven't read it, but we've both read some reviews of it. So what are what's your take on his whole theory that somehow, and as I'm stealing words from you, but somehow the world would be better had we never had like Abbey Road or Sgt. Pepper or any of that stuff, I guess. So
I don't know. I did a bit of a longer piece on that and just talked about my quibbles with his arguments. And what I don't like mainly about it is, and just to borrow the exact word I use in the blog post, it's just a very reactionary argument. Like, he's saying that, he's arguing that the Beatles basically shouldn't have evolved or progressed, and that they just should have...
They should have done I Want to Hold Your Hand for, like, 10
right.
years.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a great song, obviously, but that's something that just wasn't going to happen. And yeah, I just, it's a, you know, kind of a curious argument. I think the title is just kind of a, it's intentionally kind of incendiary, you know, just to gin up attention.
Yeah,
and
it's got us talking about it right now, so.
Exactly. But the majority of the book it all sounds pretty interesting, but the majority of it is about, like, the development of pop music. From like ragtime to like music hall and big band, and how like technology factored in and changed the dynamics of everything. So it does sound like a very worthwhile read. And I think if I made critical remarks, I'd probably, you know, owe it to the guy on a certain level to read it. So I'm going to, But yeah, it sounds like it's about quite a bit more than just what the Beatles did from, you know, Sgt. Pepper's onward.
And this guy actually contacted you, the author. He, like, sent you a little note, right?
Yeah, well, I guess. Like, I still have a hard time believing that I was actually this guy. But he did post a comment on
everything on the internet is true. You should know that.
Is that how it is? this guy claimed to be Elijah Wald, I think his name is, and he said he actually agreed with most of what I said, and said he was curious as to what I thought about the rest of the book. So I'm going to read it here pretty quick before it becomes less relevant or whatever. So
well, you're only one,
hopefully I'll get some more up.
You're only one. Okay. You're only one Google search away from him actually being able to.
From having read it. And,
you know, I know I've written stuff where you just search for the title to see if anybody's talking about it. So I would imagine
yeah.
It would be pretty easy to find. So.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope it was Elijah himself.
All right, so you've put together a list for us, the 5 most underappreciated Beatles songs. And
yeah, let me...
The one caveat that you have is, what's the latest album that you go up to? Like, Help, maybe?
Yeah, that's the thing. I didn't want... Well, for some of us, like,
this
everything from Love... Like,
okay, just for me, this position is indefensible, so go ahead and defend it.
Okay. this is not my, like, definitive, like, top 5 underappreciated Beatles songs. The reason I did just songs from the first 5 albums is I thought, like, for some of us, like, I'm sure, I mean, I know me and I'm sure you and maybe hopefully some of the people listening, like, Rubber Soul and Onwards are so familiar to us. Like, you just know it track by track, and, you know the transitions from one song to the next and whatnot. And so I didn't want to, like, go out on a limb and say, like, oh, you know, this song off of Revolver, I think, is underappreciated when, you know, Revolver is, like, you know, often considered one of the greatest albums of all time. So I didn't want, you know, someone listening to be like, oh, you've got to be kidding, like, with my favorite Beatles song, you know, something like that. So that's why I chose to just go with the first 5 albums.
Yeah,
which
in preparation, I actually tried to go and from the later albums try to pick out some underappreciated songs. And it's really...
Okay.
It really is hard to argue that some of these songs are underappreciated. Like, I mean, what song off the White Album is underappreciated? Because everybody knows, like,
exactly.
Every song off there. So, no, I mean,
yeah.
I can see your point that way, but I think I'll probably play a couple anyway. So, go ahead. Let's
let's
get started with your first one I have queued up here is It Won't Be Long. Tell us a little bit about this song.
It's the first song off their second album. Called This is the Beatles, the second UK album. That's what I'm working with here, is their like the UK canon albums. And that was actually the song that I heard that kind of inspired me to start writing about them more, just because, you know, like, the first time you hear it, for me anyway, it was just like kind of a revelation. It was like, wow, this is just a dynamic, like, catchy, interesting, unique song. So,
and again, not one you're going to find on a lot of, like, the greatest hits CDs.
Exactly. Yeah, nowhere. So,
okay,
we'll
play it now. Here we go. This is the first minute or so of It Won't Be Long. Here it is.
It won't be long, yeah. It won't be long, yeah.
So what do you got for us on that?
Well, what I mean, there are a lot of things going on there. It's cool how it just, like, really, like, busts out of the gate there with, like, with the chorus, You Won't Be Long chorus, and then the echoing yes that John and, I'm assuming, you know, George and Paul do have a very addictive quality.
Not enough echoing yes in today's music, I think.
Absolutely. What's interesting about the yes, too, is I guess yeah was a word that was, like, it was used on, like, an American pop music, but was kind of not frowned upon, but, like, less widespread in British music. And so when the Beatles released She Loves You and they had the yeah, 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 some people kind of thought it was just, like, this lame filler. But it's a really effective word, and especially in the way that they use it with, like, the, you know, going back and forth. You know, it really adds quite a bit to the song. And I think too, like, it achieves the sort of, like, the energy of the song is obviously very, like, robust. And while it's not as, like, iconic as Twist and Shout or just, like, you know, crazily catchy, I think it's up there with that song and, like, that energy level that it achieves, just, like, this manic pop energy that's pretty compelling.
Next song, No Reply.
Okay.
This on Beatles for Sale.
Yeah. Yeah, the first song, again, the first track, maybe that's not surprising that a couple of these are the first tracks on the album. But, yeah, the first track on Beatles for Sale, which is, I think, their fourth album. Again, a pretty interesting song, a John song, a Lennon song, that has some of, like, his trademark themes and also some pretty interesting stuff going on with, harmonies and musically, too.
Okay, we'll start, let's go. No Reply.
This happened once before, when I came to your door, no reply. They said it wasn't you, but I saw you peep through your window. I saw the light. I saw the light. I know that you saw me as I looked up to see your face. I tried to telephone, they said you were not home. That's a lie, 'cause I know where you've been. I saw you walking your door. I nearly died. I nearly died. 'Cause you walked hand in hand with another man in my place. If I were you.
Now, is that one of the ones that it's not on the number one hits? I mean, where did that one end up, like, on the charts?
That is a good question. I don't. Do you know?
I do not know. No, it wasn't
okay.
It wasn't a theoretical question.
You know, I don't know much. Like, that album didn't have I don't know. If any of the songs, I could be very wrong here, but any of the songs from that album end up on like their greatest hits albums. Like, I guess I think that was an album, like, it was very Dylan influenced, especially John's. Like, I think a couple tracks later, there's a song called "I'm a Loser" that Lennon wrote. It's very, like, you know, a depressing, obviously kind of Dylan tinged song. So that album didn't have a lot of the, like, more standard, like, pop fare that you know, that Beatles fans were used to. So yeah, that's one album that really kind of gets lost in the shuffle, I think, pretty easily.
When you go back and you listen to some of those records, I mean, we all remember them as the greatest records ever made, but there are kind of some duds on there.
Absolutely.
And what's kind of strange is, you know, you see there are a lot of cover songs on there, songs that they didn't write, that they had just covered, you know, they steal from somebody else.
Right.
That's kind of a little unnerving to think that when they're, you know, they're just getting their catalog started, that, you know, they're just borrowing liberally from other people. I mean, especially when you see what, you know, they eventually became and how much people started stealing from them. It's just interesting.
Right. Well, they kind of like, how should I put this? They gave relevance to like the album format, because before it was just like, it was just mainly singles that were released, or like the only albums that did good were like Frank Sinatra records or like Judy Garland records. So it was like pop music like that, the rock music. As far as that one, like albums weren't the preferred format. So like they were just kind of getting to know it sort of. And that's why I think like they mixed it up, put in some more familiar songs like Motown songs on some of their, on like their second and third album. And then some more like familiar, like pop standards, on the first album, especially that, just because again, they were just sort of, getting used to the album format and trying to, like lay out a, I don't know, lay out a path or something like that.
Okay. Third song. And I agree with you 100% on this one. I've Just Seen a Face from Help.
Okay.
I don't know. Nice. Really underappreciated. I think this is probably not overappreciated. I think it's just appreciated.
Okay.
It's like right in the middle, right where it should be. So
okay.
Here's I've Just Seen a Face.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
All right, so tell us what's going on there.
Well, let me just say, I think one of the main reasons I consider it to be underappreciated, or it might get overlooked, is that it's on Help. It's a McCartney song, but the song that immediately follows it on Help, I'm almost certain, is Yesterday, which obviously is, you know, is remembered as one of Paul's greats, like, you know, emotional songs. And I happen to think that I've just seen a face.
Isn't that like the most covered song of all time, or something?
Something like that. Yeah. And I think that I've Just Seen a Face is a better song. I think it's just, there's more going on there. It's more interesting, like the pace of the song. It's got to be one of the Beatles' like most like quickly paced songs. And at the same time, it still is very, very emotive and touching. And it has like, it's got like that country, almost sort of bluegrass feel to it. This is like a, you know, a rock and roll band playing that sort of music. So it was part of, you know, like the process of the Beatles just redefining what kind of music they considered to, or they want to write, or considered to be like within their genre. You know, they're sort of expanding the pop rock genre, so to speak. So yeah, it's really
And they do it without, there aren't any drums in that song, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't think
it just, it sounds like the two acoustic guitars and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Ringo to go have a smoke or go pick up a sandwich or something, and they just decided to.
And the there's like a little solo in there that I think just pretty much follows the, it's just a melody that's being replayed. And even so, it's got like a little twang, you know, very twang feel to it. But it's again, it's a very like affecting guitar part. Yeah, I just think it's an amazing song.
Okay, here I'll go on to the next one. If I Fell. Now this is from A Hard Day's Night, which of course also has, you know, that came out in movie format.
Yeah.
And watch the movie as well. So, I believe this is, they play this while they're at a rehearsal of some kind.
Yeah,
actually. The movie. I found the movie to be terrible, actually. I mean, aside from the music, but it's really kind of bizarre. So
yeah, it showed at least that they were like naturally very charming and entertaining guys, because I don't think it was too much of a transition for them to just go and kind of dick around, you know, it's pretty much what they're doing the entire time. But, yeah, it's kind of...
It's basically them running from place to place right. And then people following them around. Anyway, so, okay, here's If I Fell.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. If I trust in you, don't run and hide. If I love you too, oh please don't hurt my pride like her. 'Cause I couldn't stand the pain and I would be sad if I...
Yeah, see, that's another one where I'm not necessarily sure that song is underappreciated in terms of their whole career, but it certainly... overshadowed on that album because mm-hmm. there's so many monsters,
yeah.
monster songs on A Hard Day's Night. So,
one thing that I think is really interesting about it is it's a very revealing song about John. If you like, you pay sort of close attention to the lyric. You know, it's a beautiful and really pristine song, but what John is saying is not so flattering. Like he's basically asking this girl if she will be like, if he can trust that she will be true to him so that he can leave a girl he's currently with and then have a like stable relationship, a loving relationship with the girl in question. So it's quite a kind of a bait and switch maybe, or kind of a trick that John does, because it's, you know, it's not a very, it shouldn't be a song that we like swoon over in that way, because it's kind of, I don't know, mean-spirited, cheating, devious.
Yeah, it does. It certainly sounds very romantic. I'm sure you probably have plenty of weddings where people play that as like the, like the father-daughter dance.
Right.
And it's just an FU from John Lennon to someone.
Pretty much. And that is something that he, like, you know, from a lot of what I've read, you probably know this too, like, John Lennon was not a good person for a lot of his life. Like, he was terrible to his first son, Julian. He mistreated women. He was just kind of, he could be very cruel to people. He was cynical and, like, sardonic, a really dark humor. Very charming guy, but, again, for a lot of his life, he was kind of a prick. So, that's something you have to kind of reconcile. Reconcile, like, popular image or, like, you know, their great music with that.
Yeah, well, that in reading the autobiography of the biography of Kurt Cobain, it's called Heavier Than Heaven, I think. And here I went into the book like, here I'm going to learn all the stuff about, you know, somebody I admire, and
mm-hmm.
it turns out he was just a royal dick. I mean, he had very few redeeming qualities
right.
in his entire life. So it's so it was a little more of a downer in that respect. So.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned Kurt Cobain. It's funny you mentioned Kurt Cobain because that If I Fell is his favorite Beatles song, and they, I guess they would play it like during sound checks or like if something went haywire on stage and they just need like filler, they would just go into that song. So
no, I think they actually mentioned that in the book that he could play that even as a young kid and that he had.
Oh really?
You know, yeah. That was one of the first songs that he actually recorded when he got his you know, little tape recorder. Or
okay, so, nice.
Yeah, and his I think his parents, whenever they were actually together, they actually they recorded him singing a lot of Beatles songs. So certainly there was the influence there. Now this last song I had not heard of, and we're jumping around from years to years.
Mm-hmm.
So There's a Place, which is on Please Please Me.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on here?
This is, yeah, it's the, I think it's like the second to last song on the album. It's another John song. I think four of these were John songs. Maybe there's no surprise there. because he was an amazing songwriter, clearly. But it's another John song, a very adult song. Like he's treating some of these like emotional matters, not necessarily in an adult way, but they're taking them seriously anyway. Like it's about how he kind of retreats into himself when things don't go well and he encounters hardships and whatnot. So it's a very adult and very emotional song.
All right, here it is. There's a Place.
There's a place where I can go when I feel low, when I feel blue, and it's my mind, and there's no time when I'm alone. I think of you and things you
See, that doesn't really strike me as one that is in the top echelon of the catalog. But
okay,
go ahead.
Fair enough.
it is impossible that we could ever disagree about any of this. So.
I really like it because it's a very challenging song vocally. Like the harmony they pull off is it's not an easy one, I think it's a very effective one. And then there's other things about the song, like the I like the harmonica lead-in, which is something they really honed pretty well on Please Please Me with, like, the title track and of course, Love Me Do. So there are some other things going on there, too, but mainly the harmony and then the theme of the song, which I guess really, drew me in. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know what "we'll see" means. Right there. Like, we're still waiting on the judgment of that song. We'll see how people react to it once it gets released.
So, when we were talking about doing this podcast initially, you said you wanted to talk about some underappreciated Beatles songs. And I immediately said Two of Us was probably my most underappreciated Beatles song. And you immediately agreed with that, I think.
Yeah, very, very enthusiastically.
But of course, it's left out of your list because of your bogus, like, nothing past 65.
Well, to be honest, I think Let It Be kind of falls outside of that, just because it was like it's not that great of an album, and people obviously know Let It Be itself, the title track, and a couple other songs in there, like Across the Universe, but. That's not one that like your average Beatles fan seems to know by heart. So I could have included that one, but I did want to make
sure. Well, it's way better than like Yellow Submarine, which is just. I mean, I don't know what they were taking during the recording of Yellow Submarine.
Right.
I want some of it.
But yeah, Two of Us. Let's talk about that. That is, I mean, it's like an absolutely disarming song. Don't you think?
Yes, it gets my guard down.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, it's just, it certainly deserves, you know, you're not going to find it on any greatest hits compilations of the Beatles, but it certainly, just in terms of the quality of the song,
mm-hmm.
deserves to be on there.
I think, too, what's interesting, and I know I'm not the only person to react this way to the song, but you know, because it's John and Paul singing it together, and it's Two of Us, and it's got these kind of like very romantic, fanciful, like romantic, fanciful imagery going on. It's so easy to imagine that it's those two who are doing all this stuff together, and like, you know, they're writing wonderful songs together and just like not at each other's throats and loathing one another.
You think there's a subtext there?
Yeah, I mean, it is about Linda and Paul. Like, that's not a secret. It's cool to at least imagine it as if, like, it were John and Paul getting along still, you know? I think it sort of adds...
Well, yeah, I mean, those were in the waning... It was recorded in the waning days when everything was falling apart. I mean, I you know, even... I'd listened to a podcast regarding the White Album. I guess some White Album expert came on, and he said that entire album and everyone from then on was essentially these guys would sit in a room, write a song by themselves, arrange it by themselves, and then maybe some other guy would come in and play on it. So, I mean, they were so fractured at that point. So, well, here, I'll just play it. Two of us.
I Dig a Pygmy by Charles Hawtrey and the Deaf Aids. Phase one, in which Doris gets her oats.
Two of us riding nowhere, spending someone's hard-earned pay. You and me Sunday driving.
Probably not going to hear a lot of people singing that on, like, American Idol on Friday night or whatever.
It's unfortunate.
But as I said, I was going through, I was kind of putting together my list of the later albums, and, you know, the songs that I was picking out are, again, ones that may not be on the greatest hits albums, but are still really good, but they're certainly not underappreciated. Like, A Day in the Life is one of my favorites. Mother Nature's Son from the White Album. Certainly, I think it's gotten its due, but one that certainly has gotten its due, but I still think is underappreciated is I Am the Walrus.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one that people. I mean, it's one of their most famous songs. But I still, that song to me, I mean, it's almost hard to say that it was before its time because that assumes that its time hasn't come. I mean,
right.
I mean, I still don't think bands of today have caught up to that song. I mean, it's so crazy with its treatment of sampling and, you know, the breaks that it has and then the orchestration and kind of how they meld that all in together and then, you know, with the spooky imagery and all that kind of stuff and just how dark and crazy it is. I mean, I just think, you know, it's just such a fantastic bouillabaisse of different styles and all that stuff. I mean, I just think it's just so brilliant. But it's, again, not one that you're going to see, you know, the oldie stations aren't really playing I Am the Walrus over that, just because it's not.
I completely agree. It's a bizarre song, it's, you know, off the reservation, but.
All right, so that's the list. That is the definitive list. There will be no arguing with any of this.
I would hope not.
So what else you got going on?
Well, in terms of the blog. We're talking all Beatles all the time.
Sure.
What else is going on? I've been reading a couple books, kind of blowing up on, like, especially the early history, which has been pretty interesting. I don't know how much you know about their days in Hamburg, in Germany, but that's really where, like, they really, like, how should I put this? They had to play constantly. Like, they played six nights a week, sometimes seven nights a week, and they had to play these just, like, really wrenching, like, 8-hour sets or 7-8-hour sets. And so they did a bunch of cover songs, and that's probably why some of their later, or some of those albums have a lot of cover, or that could be anyway why some of those albums have a lot of cover songs on there, is just because those were the songs they were used to playing. They just had to fill up time. So that's a really interesting period of their career. That's where they kind of came into their own as especially musicians, and then, you know, songwriters as well. So that, and I've been having fun too, writing about songs. Like, I have these inspired by the Beatles posts, where I'll take songs that I mean, not necessarily inspired, like, this artist drew inspiration, but they, you know, they kind of sound like a Beatles song. Like, I did one with Smashing Pumpkins and Blur recently. So that's been something else I've really been enjoying too.
All right, Barry Lenzer, go check out Beatles. I'm sorry, I stuck an S at the end. Beatlemania Revisited.blogspot.com, or I think if you probably just Google Beatlemania Revisited, you'll probably
hopefully
find it. My old good
Absolutely.
Friend, Bear. Well, I appreciate you being on the
yeah, thanks so much for having me, man.
Knowledge with us. Yeah, sure. Okay.
All right,
talk to
you
soon.
Don't come, keep the time from standing in the English rain. I'll find stuff I sent to Edmund Allen Gossett. Keep your knife upon that British card. Oh, I'm
serviceable villain. You kissed the vice of my mistress, that is the retirement.
Is he dead? Sit you down, father. Rescue.